This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
You know, for centuries, the unwritten rule of technology was basically, if you build the machine, you hold the keys.
Right, exactly.
I mean, whether you were, you know, assembling a combustion engine or standing up a server rack, once you tighten that final bolt, you were in control.
You decided when it turned on.
Yeah, and who got to use it, how fast it ran, all of that, until today, honestly.
It really is a massive shift.
Today, we are looking at a single 24-hour period, specifically July 2, 2026, where that entire paradigm basically just collapsed.
Completely.
We're doing a deep dive into this highly detailed AI daily briefing. And the mission today is to unpack this massive collision of tech and state.
Because it's happening everywhere all at once.
It really is. I mean, we've got the U.S. government literally taking the keys to a major AI model. We've got Japan bypassing the private market entirely to build, like, an army of 10 million physical robots.
Oh, and don't forget China.
Right, China turning raw computing power into this metered luxury utility. It is wild. So welcome to the deep dive. The scale of this is just hard to overstate for you listening at home. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. Because, you know, it's a fundamental rewiring of how global power actually operates.
Yeah.
We're seeing AI transition from just being a commercial product into a heavily regulated, tightly controlled piece of national infrastructure.
Mm.
And the speed is just staggering.
So let's start with Anthropic, because their latest moves, they perfectly illustrate this. It's like a mix of breathtaking capability and just the sudden harsh reality of government control.
Right. They just rolled out Claude Sonnet 5.
Yeah, as the default model across their free and pro tiers. But, you know, this isn't just a smarter chat bot that writes a nice email.
No, not at all.
Sonnet 5 is built for agentic behavior. It's designed to autonomously navigate browsers and terminals.
And that shift from passive answering to active execution, that is a massive leap.
It's huge.
Because previously, you'd ask an AI question, it would spit out text, and then you'd have to take that text, paste it into a document, or, you know, actually run the code yourself.
You had to do the heavy lifting.
Exactly. But Sonnet 5 takes the steering wheel.
Mm.
If you tell it to research a competitor, compile the data, format a spreadsheet, and write a summary, it is literally driving the computer to do that.
Just clicking through pages and opening apps.
Yeah, step by step, yeah.
It relentlessly pushes through the task until it is done. And to actually make that possible, Anthropic made a 1 million token context window the standard in their Claude Code environment.
Which is just an unbelievable amount of data.
Right. Just to give you a sense of scale, a million tokens means you can drop entire software code bases in there. Or like a decades worth of financial reports.
Or massive legal libraries.
Yeah, all at once into its short-term memory.
And it doesn't lose the thread. It remembers what you told it at the beginning. When an AI can hold that much context and execute actions autonomously,
yeah.
I mean, you unlock massive productivity gains.
Mm.
But you also unlock entirely new categories of risk.
Right.
And that is exactly what happened behind the scenes with Anthropic's other frontier models. Claude Fable 5 and Mythos 5.
Right. This is the really wild part of the story. So Fable 5 was suddenly restored for global access on July 1st, but it had quietly been under a U.S. Commerce Department export ban since June 12th.
Yes.
I really want to dig into this. How does a major commercial AI model end up getting banned by the federal government in the first place?
Well, it was triggered by an internal safety discovery. Amazon researchers were probing Fable 5, you know, stress testing its capabilities.
Beg you do.
Right. And they found a critical bypass technique. They discovered that Fable 5 wasn't just capable of identifying severe software vulnerabilities.
Wait, it could do more than just find them?
It could autonomously write the exploit codes necessary to actually take advantage of those vulnerabilities.
Hold on. So it's moving from passive analysis to, like, active weaponization. It wasn't just pointing out a broken window in the security system. It was basically fabricating the exact lockpick you need to break into the house.
And that crosses a massive line for the government.
Mm-hmm.
It turns the model into a dual-use weapon.
Wow.
When a frontier model demonstrates autonomous offensive cybersecurity capabilities like that, the government treats it similarly to advanced cryptography or, honestly, nuclear materials.
So they just stepped in?
Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Commerce Department instituted an export ban and pulled the plug on global access to Fable 5.
And what about Mythos 5?
They restricted Mythos 5 entirely, locked it down exclusively to core infrastructure agencies within the U.S. government.
But they lifted the Fable 5 ban just a few weeks later, on June 30th. How did Anthropic get out of the penalty box so fast?
Well, they engineered a compromise. the Commerce Department Safety Institute, CISI, they ran extensive red team tests on a brand new cybersecurity classifier that Anthropic whipped up. And they agreed to lift the export ban because this new classifier successfully blocks like over 99% of those dangerous jailbreak attempts.
The mechanics of how this classifier works are actually fascinating, though.
Yeah, they really are.
Like, if you ask Fable 5 to do something that triggers that cybersecurity alarm, it doesn't just flash a giant red warning screen and lock your account.
Right.
It intercepts the dangerous request, pulls it out of Fable 5, and then quietly redirects it to the older Claude Opus 4.8 model.
Which is such a smart way to handle it.
Right.
They're attempting to balance national security with a seamless user experience.
Because getting locked out is annoying.
Right. A hard shutdown disrupts workflow and frustrates developers. Rerouting the prompt to a less capable but safer legacy model keeps the conversation going, just, you know, without the risk of generating high-level exploit code.
It feels exactly like a high-end bouncer at an exclusive club.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. Like, you wander toward a door you aren't supposed to go through, maybe the VIP room or the manager's office. Instead of the bouncer grabbing you by the collar and just throwing you out into the street, he just puts a hand on your shoulder.
Yeah, gently escorts you back to the main lobby.
Exactly. He says, hey, why don't we hang out over here instead? And that safe, well-lit main lobby is Opus 4.8.
The problem with that system, though, is the false positives.
Oh.
If you are doing perfectly normal, benign coding or debugging work, the safety classifier might still get spooked by the complexity of your prompt.
Just because it looks weird.
Yeah. You could find yourself abruptly downgraded to Opus 4.8 just because your code looked a little too close to an exploit, which means you lose the advanced reasoning capabilities of Fable 5 exactly when you actually need them.
That's rough. But, you know, this whole Fable 5 saga really cements a profound shift in power. Former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim makes a brilliant observation here in the briefing.
Oh, yes, about the door handles.
Right, pointing out that this proves governments now physically hold the door handle to frontier models. They can open and close global access to these systems at will.
We have moved entirely past the era where tech companies operate in a libertarian vacuum.
For sure.
The state has realized it just cannot afford to let these models circulate freely if they pose a threat to national security. The government is asserting its right to, like you said, turn that door handle and lock the room.
But it's not just international borders where the U.S. government is asserting control over these door handles. They are trying to flex that exact same muscle domestically, too.
Right.
Which brings us to a massive legal collision.
Yes. The tension is shifting from international export controls to a classic federalism tug of war.
Okay.
You know, between the U.S. federal government and individual states.
So the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, just voted 2-0 to draft a new policy statement directly taking aim at the Colorado AI Act.
Good.
And this draft is currently open for public comments until July 31st. So basically, Colorado went ahead and passed their own AI regulations, and now the federal government is stepping in.
Exactly.
What exactly is Colorado demanding that the FTC finds so problematic?
The core friction is about accuracy and output mandates. The Colorado AI Act attempts to pressure businesses and developers to alter their AI outputs to meet specific state-level standards for accuracy and fairness.
Okay.
Essentially, if your AI doesn't meet Colorado's specific definition of what is accurate and unbiased, you could face state-level penalties.
Which, I mean, sounds noble on paper. But if you're building a massive AI infrastructure, having 50 different states demanding 50 slightly different definitions of accuracy, that makes the technology nearly impossible to deploy.
It'd be a nightmare.
You'd basically have to geofence the truth based on zip codes.
That is precisely the federal argument. The FTC is asserting that this state law is preempted by federal regulations.
Okay, based on what, though?
They are anchoring their entire position on an executive order regarding AI that was issued by President Trump this past December.
Ah, the December EO.
Right. That executive order was designed to lay down a unified national framework for AI safety and output moderation. So the FTC's stance is that Colorado is basically illegally setting up local speed limits on a federal highway, and it disrupts the entire system.
Hold on, I have to push back hard on this. On behalf of the listener, we are talking about a 2-0 draft statement from a federal commission.
Sure.
That is just two commissioners voting on a piece of paper that does not have the magic constitutional power to just vaporize legislation passed by an entire state government.
It doesn't vaporize it, no, but it is a massive legal blow to the state's momentum.
That's dope.
By officially stating that the Trump executive order preempts state law, The FTC is signaling that the federal government is fully willing to litigate this. And it provides immense legal cover for AI companies who want to just ignore the Colorado law.
Sure, I get that. It's a very loud warning shot. It's laying the groundwork for a lawsuit. But a policy statement isn't a binding final rule.
Right.
A federal judge is ultimately going to have to look at the text of the Trump executive order, look at the text of the Colorado law, and make the final call on preemption.
Absolutely.
The FTC can't just decree a state law out of existence without going through the courts.
You are absolutely correct. It isn't an instant kill switch for the Colorado law. The courts will have the final say. But think about the chilling effect.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you are an AI developer, do you spend millions of dollars re-engineering your models to comply with Colorado's accuracy standards today, knowing the federal government is actively moving to strike those standards down tomorrow?
Probably not.
Right. The FTC is creating a paralysis that heavily favors the federal standard.
It is so fascinating watching the legal architecture of this new era being built in real time, you know, like brick by contested brick.
It really is.
But while the U.S. is busy drawing regulatory lines, arguing over state versus federal powers and playing referee, another major global player is taking a completely different approach.
Yes, they are.
They aren't just writing the rules of the road. They are literally building their own cars.
You are talking about Japan.
Yes.
And their strategy is a radical departure from the American approach.
Okay, so Japan has just announced a plan to pour 1 trillion yen, which translates to about 6.2 billion U.S. dollars over the next 5 years into creating a sovereign AI foundation model.
Massive investment.
And they aren't stopping at a software platform. They are pairing this foundation model with a fleet of 10 million AI robots.
10 million physical robots. The scale is staggering.
It's unbelievable.
To execute this, the Japanese government has tapped a consortium called Noetra. This is spearheaded by SoftBank and Sony.
Big hitters.
Yeah. And they are expected to bring in up to 44 other companies across automotive, electronics, finance, logistics. It is essentially an all-star team of Japanese industry.
But the key here is what they are actually building. We use the term physical AI.
Right.
How does training a physical AI differ from training the digital AI we use on our laptops every day?
It requires an entirely different data diet.
Okay.
When you train a digital model like Claude, you feed it text. It processes logic, language, code. But physical AI has to understand the real world.
Oh, sure.
It has to calculate spatial awareness, friction, gravity, the tensile strength of an object it's trying to pick up. You just cannot teach a robot how to navigate a cluttered room by having it read Wikipedia.
Right. So how do you train it? If text doesn't work, what are they actually feeding this Noetra Foundation model?
They're feeding it multi-sensor data.
Like what?
We're talking about massive influxes of LiDAR data, stereoscopic camera feeds, and millions of hours of logs from remote-controlled robots operated by human beings.
Wow.
Plus, they rely heavily on incredibly detailed CAD-level physics simulations. They build a digital twin of the real world, run millions of trial-and-error physical interactions at super speed, and then bake that spatial intelligence directly into the AI model.
So they are essentially teaching the AI how to live and move in three-dimensional space before they ever put it in a metal chassis.
Exactly.
And they are moving aggressively on this. They are aiming for a limited deployment of these initial physical models by late 2028. That is barely 2 years away.
Which is incredibly fast. It highlights a completely different philosophy on how to handle the AI revolution.
Yeah.
Lawyer Kyungjin Kim points out that with Japan turning AI and robotics into this massive state-sponsored enterprise, the boundary between government regulation and industrial policy is just completely blurring.
That is the perfect way to frame it. Because the U.S. model, you know, it relies on private companies raising venture capital to build the tech while the government figures out how to regulate it after the fact. Japan is saying, no, this technology is way too critical to our national future to leave to market forces. We are going to act as the primary investor and the architect. The state is stepping in as the ultimate entrepreneur.
Yes. But whether it's private enterprise in the U.S., or state-sponsored consortiums in Japan building these massive foundation models and running millions of physical robots forces a reckoning with a hard physical limitation.
Compute. Right, because running a 1 million token context window or calculating the physics of 10 million robots, that requires an almost unfathomable amount of computing power.
Unbelievable amounts.
The hardware has to sit somewhere, drawing massive amounts of electricity. So how is the market actually going to pay for all of this?
Well, that is the core bottleneck of the AI industry right now. Compute is the new oil.
Yeah.
And the infrastructure to refine it, the data centers, the GPUs, the cooling systems, is incredibly expensive. Which brings us to a major development out of China, where they are fundamentally changing the economic model of AI access.
Right. DeepSeek is launching their new DeepSeek V4 model in mid-July.
Yep.
But it isn't the model's capabilities making headlines here. It is the paradigm shift in how they are charging for it. They are moving away from flat subscription fees and introducing a strictly time-based, metered pricing model.
Yes, they are introducing peak and off-peak hours, literally treating artificial intelligence exactly like the public power grid.
The peak times in Beijing are locked in from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and then again from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Business hours, basically.
Exactly. And during those specific windows, the cost of using the AI effectively doubles.
Double the price.
Just to give you the exact numbers for their V4 Pro model during peak hours, if your input results in a cash miss, it will cost 6 RMB per 1 million tokens for the input and 12 RMB for the output.
We should probably break down what a cash miss actually means in this context, because it's vital to understanding why the cost doubles.
Sure. Think of a cash miss like walking into a restaurant and ordering something completely off menu.
Right.
If you order the daily special, the chef has it already prepped, sitting under a heat lamp. That's a cash hit. It's cheap. It's fast. The system remembers it.
Right.
But if you ask for a complex custom dish, the chef has to pull out fresh ingredients and start from scratch. That takes way more time and energy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When the AI experiences a cash miss, it hasn't recently processed that specific query, so it can't rely on its short-term memory.
It has to do the hard work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It has to spin up fresh computational power, meaning the GPUs physically draw more wattage from the power grid to generate the answer.
Wow.
Because that requires more raw energy.
Yeah.
DeepSeek is going to charge you double to do it during busy hours.
It completely blew my mind reading this because it forces a massive behavioral shift.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, utility companies charge you more to run your air conditioning on a hot July afternoon because the grid is stressed. They want you to wait until 8 p.m. Are we really about to enter a world where data scientists and enterprise developers are setting their alarms for 2.0 a.m. to run their massive million token document analyses, just like running a dishwasher off peak to save money on the electric bill?
That is precisely the behavior DeepSeek wants to incentivize. They need to smooth out the demand curve on their data centers.
Make it more predictable.
Yes. And this signals a major maturation in the Chinese AI market, because for the past year, we've watched this brutal race to the bottom price war among Chinese AI firms.
Everyone just slashing prices.
Exactly, where everyone was just undercutting each other to grab market share.
But you can't undercut your way to zero when the electricity bill still comes due.
Precisely. This move shows the strategy is shifting from aggressive customer acquisition to a highly practical cutthroat competition over computational efficiency.
Mm.
They're treating AI compute like a metered public utility because the underlying resources are actually finite.
Yeah, there's only so much power.
Right. And if this time-based pricing model works for DeepSeek, it is highly likely that other major providers globally will follow suit. You can't just leave the AI faucet running all day anymore. Businesses will have to be infinitely more strategic about when they execute their heavy workloads.
Which brings us perfectly to how all of this impacts you, the listener, right now.
Yes.
We've covered a lot of massive geopolitical and economic shifts today, but there are some very practical, actionable takeaways here for your daily life. Let's make sure you can leverage this information today.
Well, the most immediate takeaway involves Anthropic's new Sonnet 5 model and that massive 1 million token context window we talked about.
Yes, if you deal with massive amounts of text, whether that's complex technical manuals, years of legal contracts, endless transcripts of meeting minutes, you need to start using Sonnet 5 to process this data right now.
Right now.
Anthropic is currently running introductory pricing. It's $2 per million tokens for input and $10 for output. But that price is scheduled to jump to $3.15 after August 31st.
So if your organization has a massive archive of data that needs processing, summarizing, or formatting, the strategic move is to batch that work and run it through Sonnet 5 before the end of August.
Save some money.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Take advantage of the lower rate before the price hike hits.
Now, the second practical tip goes back to that bouncer we talked about, the new cybersecurity classifier on Fable 5.
Yes.
If you are using Fable 5 for standard coding and you suddenly get bumped down to the older Opus 4.8 model, don't panic.
Right. Recognize that it is highly likely a false positive. Your code wasn't actually malicious, but the structural complexity of your prompt triggered the safety net.
And the fix here is actually pretty simple. Just rewrite your prompt, but wrap it in a lot more business context.
Yes.
Explain to the model exactly why you are asking for this code and what the benign end goal is. Providing that explicit context can often satisfy the safety classifier and allow you to stay in the advanced Fable 5 environment.
And building on that friction, former lawmaker Kumjin Kim offers one final, absolutely crucial piece of advice for businesses operating in this space.
Okay.
If your company relies heavily on these frontier AI tools for daily operations, you need to start keeping meticulous logs right now.
Logs of what specifically?
Logs of every single request that gets blocked or redirected by these safety classifiers, including the timestamps and the reasons why.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Governments are aggressively turning the door handles, and tech companies are constantly tweaking their safety filters behind the scenes. Your workflows are going to get interrupted.
Inevitable.
Having a clear internal paper trail of what was blocked and how it impacted your productivity is going to be essential for troubleshooting.
And for protecting yourself.
More importantly, yes, it will protect you in future disputes regarding work continuity or missed deadlines. You have to document the friction.
That makes perfect sense.
Wow.
From the U.S. government aggressively stepping in to lock down autonomous coding models, to a massive legal brawl over state versus federal AI standards,
to Japan financing a state-owned physical robot army.
Yeah, and China turning compute into a metered luxury. It is just a vivid snapshot of a world rapidly rewiring itself.
It really forces us to confront a fundamental reality about the infrastructure we are building.
How so?
Well, as these AI models continue to scale up,
yeah,
you know, driving our scientific research, automating our businesses, eventually animating millions of robots in the physical world, and as the immense computing power needed to fuel them is consolidated and strictly metered, we have to ask a very difficult question.
What's that?
If governments and a handful of utility-scale providers are the ones ultimately holding the door handles to these frontier models, deciding who gets peak access and who gets locked out entirely, then who really controls your ability to think, to build, and to process information at scale?
That is heavy.
If you rely entirely on an engine you didn't build and someone else holds the keys, are you actually in the driver's seat?
Something to think very carefully about the next time you drop a prompt into a chat window. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.